It's time to shut down the CIA.
America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse.
We'll do everything possible to reduce the serious threat to our society.
For a national crusade against drugs.
Our most serious problem today is cocaine, and in particular, crack.
The only thing I would say about that is we're in real trouble on that.
Who's responsible?
It's the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency.
No!
The CIA is probably the largest drug dealer on Earth.
What is the relationship of the Central Intelligence Agency with international drug producers and distributors?
There has been a relationship between the increased flow and supply of drugs coming to the United States and CIA covert operations.
The alarming connection between drugs on our streets and U.S. covert operations abroad.
Who's responsible? Who's responsible? Let me tell you straight out.
What I found was that starting in the 70s in Peru, teenagers in middle-class neighborhoods started smoking this paste, this coca paste, and the scientists started writing about it because it turned them into, the kinds of things you see in Reefer Madness, these drug zombies that would walk around and that's all they would think about was getting their next fix, and this was literally true.
Who's responsible?
They started warning the Americans at this conference in Lima in summer of 79. The South Americans got together with the North American science cocaine experts and said, look, you've got a problem coming. You need to do something about
it. Who's responsible?
And so the scientific community, led by Dr. Robert Bick of Yale, decided that this was a problem. This was a real problem. And so he went to Congress and told them that there was going to be a massive drug epidemic coming within the next few years. It had already ravaged Bolivia, it was ravaging Peru, it was ravaging Colombia, and he had never seen anything like it in his life. And there were a number of scientists in South America that were very frightened about it.
Who's responsible? Who's responsible? Who's responsible?
He suggested that the Congress start a public education campaign to warn people that this stuff was coming and don't get anywhere near it. And they thanked him for his testimony and then said, well, how do we stop the Bolivians from growing coca plants? And how do we stop the Peruvians from growing coca plants? And he said, well, it'd be easier to stop growing tobacco in Virginia. It's just never going to happen.
Who's responsible?
But they ignored what he said, and they went on with this eradication strategy called the Andean strategy. And this is what we did. We tried to get people to stop growing plants. And crack came. And it first showed up in South Central Los Angeles, probably in the very late 70s. By 1982, drug users had perfected this to take it from freebasing, which was kind of dangerous to make, to this very safe, I think it was even called healthful, method of making it with baking soda and water. And it started catching on among the very rich celebrities. It started catching on among the very rich drug dealer because cocaine was so very expensive in the late 1970s and early 1980s. But when you turned it into crack, it became very cheap since you didn't need it. And cocaine started showing up in greater and greater amounts in the streets of Los Angeles in the early 80s. The men who were running the market down in L.A., this fellow Danilo Blandone, he told the CIA that when he started this operation down there, he was paid a visit initially by Enrique Bermudez, who was the CIA agent. He was on the CIA payroll. There was a military commander of the Contras at the time, this army called the FDN. And at this meeting, he told the Inspector General of the CIA, Bermudez told them that he wanted them to adopt the flag of the FDN, he wanted them to adopt the colors of the FDN, and he said from that point on, we were part of the FDN. We used their flag, we used their colors, we used their letterhead, and, I really don't know what more you need to do to become a Contra than to accept the offer from the head of the Contras. It's not like this guy was his brother, his cousin, or something. So they were an official part of the FDN, and the FDN's role with the CIA was essentially a wholly owned subsidiary. I mean, they wrote the agreement, they picked the name, they picked the officers, they wrote the press releases, they told them to take credit for battles that they had nothing to do with. And this is all laid out in Edgar Chamorro's monograph. I think it's called Packaging the Contras, which is just a brilliant expose of what was going on inside the Contras at the time. So you had drug traffickers who were members of the FDN, and these men were meeting with CIA agents, and they took, in this case, in Dark Alliance, they took their fundraising orders directly from the CIA agent, Enrique Bermudez, and nobody has denied that. I mean, that is undisputed. Blandone, who was at the meeting, says it happened. Norwin Meneses, who was his boss, who was also at the meeting, says it happened. Adolfo Calero says they had a meeting. Nobody's denying that this occurred. If you look at the history of the FDN, and which is what I did in the book, I tracked them back to their beginnings in Guatemala as the Legion of September 15. These guys were out there, and they were involved in contract killings. They were involved in kidnappings for money. I mean, these were warriors, and they didn't have a war to fight, and they needed to have a way to make a living. So they robbed, and they stole, and they thieved. And the CIA looked at them and said, that's just the kind of organization we need. And so they signed them up.
It's time to shut down the CIA.
Opium and cocaine traffickers have expanded their operations without fear of prosecution.
These covert operations seem to provide the extraordinary protection that traffickers often need.
All of this is justified in the name of national security.
Major drug smuggling on the part of the Contras. The Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador, they were flying on the John Halls Ranch.
To finance the CIA war against Nicaragua.
The CIA station chief and people in the National Security Council are banned for life for introducing cocaine trafficking to Costa Rica.
It's important to draw a distinction between what these traffickers contributed personally out of their own pockets and what this drug ring produced. And in my series, I said that this drug ring sent millions of dollars down. And I based that on Blandone's testimony initially, and it's been since come out in the CIA Inspector General's report. They interviewed two of the men who actually took them down there. One of them they interviewed after George Hodel and I interviewed him, in which he said he took down, I think it was between $4 and $5 million from the drug ring's operation in San Francisco, took it down to Costa Rica, took it down to Honduras, and delivered it, and he said directly to a CIA agent whom he named as Ivan Gomez, and who the CIA, in its report, acknowledged that there was a CIA agent in Costa Rica during those years who was using the alias Ivan Gomez, so it was kind of hard for him to have made this up, I think. The other trafficker they interviewed, which I never talked to, was a fellow named Renato Peña Cabrera, who was the military representative of the FDN and the political representative of the FDN in San Francisco between 84 and 82. And he told the CIA Inspector General pretty much the same thing, that he made about 6 to 8 trips from San Francisco to Los Angeles. He carried between $500,000 and $1 million with him on each trip. And the men he was giving this money to told him that parts of this money was going to the Contras. He was a convicted cocaine trafficker. He became a government witness. The CIA, I don't think, found anything to contradict him. So I think it's a lot more accurate to you. I mean, I have no idea how many millions, and I have no idea how much of these millions actually went to the soldiers in the field and how much of it was used by these CIA agents down there to buy houses and girlfriends and gamble. But, I mean, the money was going down there, and it was going down there in large amounts.
The dope money from these various operations is washed through major money center banks.
No.
BCCI.
Nick and Hand.
The Panamanian banking industry.
Certainly, Panama has been a major center of narco trafficking, but that's been primarily the banks.
We removed Noriega.
Last night, I ordered U.S. military forces to Panama.
We installed the Andorra government with a cabinet with a multiplicity of links to the Panamanian banking industry, which is Panama's key function in the cocaine traffic.
The newspapers are not about to tell you what's really going on.
I never would have guessed.
Medellin cartel recruits, trains, and finances paramilitary assassination groups.
They are part of the oligarchy that rules Colombia. They have formed direct alliances with the leaders of the military. The drug cartel is determined to wipe out progressive elements, the killings of trade union leaders, peasant union leaders, social activists, and progressive political figures.
Snort a line, kill a leftist.
Our government's running a war with drug money.
What, are you crazy? What the hell are you talking about?
Since World War II, the CIA has been responsible for major expansions in the heroin and cocaine trade through its covert operations.
I mean, who's responsible for all that?
The narco-industrial complex.
What is the dope business really all about?
Yeah, usually you got sort of a glimpse of the size of the operations when the police would stumble across these things. And I think one of the best examples happened in San Francisco in 83 when they broke open the Frogman case. And this was one ship that these frogmen were swimming cocaine ashore, and they had 430 pounds of it, which was the biggest drug bust in California history at that time. And that was just one ship. And I went over and I looked at the files of the Frogman investigation, and the FBI was watching ship after ship after ship from the same Colombian freight line, the Grand Colombiana line, go up and down the coast, dropping, you know, 50 kilos here, 100 kilos here, 300 kilos here, at Portland, at Seattle, at Los Angeles. So, it was a big operation. And Meneses, Norma Meneses, who was the head of this ring, I mean, the CIA called him the drug kingpin of Nicaragua in the days of Somoza. So he was no little guy. The Meneses family was very, very powerful and very influential in the Somoza regime. His brother, Edmundo, was the chief of police of Managua for many years. He was a brigadier general in the Nicaragua National Guard. He later became Somoza's ambassador to Guatemala, where he was assassinated in 1978 by Guatemalan guerrillas who claimed essentially that he was coordinating counter-revolutionary efforts in that area. Norman had another brother named Furman, who was another general in the National Guard. Norwin was sort of the Al Capone of Nicaragua. He ran a lot of gambling places. He had tour houses outside of town with waterbeds and videotape machines, which were like a novelty back then. And they were these drive-in places you can go into with girlfriends if you want. And then he had a marijuana business going. He had nightclubs going. And he could do anything he wanted because his brother's the chief of police. So, it was sort of an open city. Landon was a minor official in the Nicaraguan government. He was the head of the wholesale markets, director of wholesale markets. And his job, and this will become important later when he gets to L.A. and begins to set up a drug network, his job was to set up demonstration projects for wholesaling agricultural goods. he had an MBA in marketing, courtesy of the taxpayers of the United States, I might add, to create wholesale markets for agricultural products. And when the Sandinistas took over, both of these men left and came to the United States, which I can't figure out how a drug trafficker the size of Norman Meneses could have been welcomed into this country, since the DEA knew he was a drug dealer since 72. And 7 years later, he waltzes in here and gets a work permit and a visa and applies for political asylum. And they started selling, they continued selling drugs as Meneses had done for many years, only they started doing it for the Contras. And shortly after this happened, Blandone hooked up with this drug dealer in South Central named Freeway Ricky Ross, who at the time was about 19 or 20 years old, had tried to become a tennis player and was looking for a college scholarship, but the problem was he couldn't read or write, so it was a little difficult for a college to let in. And which surprised him a great deal because he said, they passed me all the way through high school. As long as I was good on the tennis court, nobody expected any grades or anything. And he found it wasn't the case when he got to college. So he turned to crime to make a living. And he was he stripped cars and sold wheels and sold a little bit of cocaine. And he ran into an auto upholstery teacher at vocational school who was a cocaine user and a small-time dealer, and Rick got into the cocaine business that way and gradually worked his way up the ladder through the teacher's sources, through the teacher's sources source, until he got to the top and connected with Danilo Blandone, the MBA in marketing. And they proceeded to sort of blanket South Central with cocaine.
How much did the DEA and U.S. government officials exactly know about Norwin Meneses and his drug trafficking background? Did they have a lot of detail about that?
They had a ton. I mean, I found a DEA affidavit in those files, which went on for 3 pages about what the FBI and what the DEA knew about him. And they knew he was a multi-kilo trafficker way back in the 70s. They had been following him all the way. They had found him in New Orleans in 79. They'd found him in Tampa. They'd run across him in Southern California. They had all of his nephews running around San Francisco being arrested with 20 pounds of cocaine here and 4 pounds here. And so they knew very well who he was. Why he was allowed to do what he did for so many years is still a question that I don't have a concrete answer to. I have a suspicion, but I don't have a concrete answer.
Now, I can't remember if you said the frogman, after the bust, there was $39,000 that was seized.
Oh, yeah.
What happened to that $39,000?
The morning that they executed all these raids, they went into one of the traffickers' apartments, and in his nightstand, amidst the hand grenades and the machine gun parts and the silencer catalogs and the cocaine, they found $36,000 in cash, and they said, aha, this is drug money, which I think is a reasonable conclusion given the circumstances, and they said, we're taking this away from you, we're keeping it. And about a year, right before he was going to trial, the judge in the case got letters from 2 Contra officials in Costa Rica, which you even wrote about one of them in your book, this Aviles,
right.
The lawyer, saying, well, you know, that money you found in Julio's nightstand really isn't drug money, it's Contra money, and and we want it back, and you're impeding the process of democracy by keeping it. And so naturally, the U.S. government, who's very concerned about, impeding democracy, gave the money back to the drug trafficker, because heavens knows they didn't want to be accused of getting in the way of progress. So, Seth Rosenfeld from The Examiner wrote a story about this in 1986 and was immediately denounced by the U.S. Attorney Joe Russinello as a conspiracy theorist and a guy who's just trying to undermine the Contras, et cetera, et cetera, and the CIA had absolutely nothing to do with it. And now we know, thanks to the Inspector General's report, that the CIA flew their general counsel to San Francisco and sat down with the U.S. attorney and said, look, give the money back. And I think in a cable afterwards, they said he was extremely deferential to our wishes. So they and Joe got along famously. And then they wrote, and then these guys are great. They write cables back and forth to each other saying, boy, we sure dodged a bullet that time. Well, if anybody ever found that out, it'd sure play hell our program in Central America. We got to keep an eye on this thing because, people could say the CIA is going into drug business.
Shut down the CIA.